welcome to this episode of Anna Asks. Today's is a solo episode. It's just me talking about my own preparations for my upcoming birth. And as you may know, I have put myself on my very own maternity leave, and I don't have intentions of going and editing this podcast. So if it seems a little more waffly than usual, if there are a few gaps while I think, if there's a few more ums and ahs, then please do forgive me. I'm not going to be spending my time at an editing board. So before I start, I just want to acknowledge that I'm here on the lands of the Awabakal people, paying my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. And I think about this more actually as I get towards the point of birth, because it's something that's been happening here on sacred lands for generations and thousands and tens of thousands of years. And to be planning to give birth at home, as I am, feels like a really sacred kind of thing as well. So I'm sitting here next to my birth box. I'm going to walk you through what sort of things I've collected as birth supplies. A bit of what I've been doing to mentally prepare, a bit of background on birth choices and things that I've been doing to assist my older child, who's now 3.5, in preparing to have our baby at home, because the planning to have a baby at home when you already have older children is a little different to how it might look if your plan is to go to the hospital. So the very first thing that I'll talk about is home birth and choosing a care provider for a start. It's probably one of the questions that I get asked the most. How do I find a home birth midwife? And that might be for various reasons. One, that birth at home just feels right for you. Two, that you know the statistics around safety, physical and emotional, and likelihood of achieving a birth you want if you want a vaginal birth. And a physiological birth. If you're at home, it might come from another avenue altogether, perhaps a traumatic first experience, whatever it might be. So birthing at home is something that I didn't actually expect to do. I had my first child at home as well, but it wasn't something that I set out to achieve initially. I went to see my doctor first pregnancy very early on, and one of the first things that she asked me was, so will you go public or private? And I had private health insurance. We'd had an extended period of infertility before we conceived our first, and I was a bit taken aback. So I was only probably 4 or 5 weeks pregnant at this time. And I just was like, I don't even know. I don't know what's available. I have private health, so I guess I'll be going private, but I don't know. And so she gave me a couple of websites, or perhaps I went and found the websites, I'm not sure, and went through them and read all the different philosophies and a bit of statistical stuff about outcomes in each place. In New South Wales, you can actually get access to what the different data is for normal vaginal birth, instrumental birth, cesarean birth, augmented birth, induced birth, all of those sorts of things through a health stats website and how they compare across different hospitals. And then also through the Australian Mothers and Babies report, then you can access that data more broadly as well. And yeah, so I went looking, and in my area, there were 2 midwifery group practices available. So that is a publicly, a state health, publicly funded kind of care pathway where you're assigned a primary midwife, but they work in a team with others. So if your midwife is not available, and on the day of your appointment or on the day of your birth, then somebody else from their team, their small team, will care for you. And one of those was located at Belmont Hospital, which is a smaller hospital. It doesn't have great big operating facilities, doesn't have a big maternity ward. It just has kind of the birth center there. And I decided that that felt like the best place for me, and I got a referral there. Now, for a public funded home birth in Australia, you have to tick a lot of boxes, and I am very fortunate that my pregnancy was low risk. My health history is very plain. There are no particular like psychosocial factors that were red flags that meant that I couldn't access this program, and I was accepted into that program. And I received great care through them, and it was probably at about the 6 month mark, I was maybe 24 weeks or so, that I started at a hypnobirthing course. And our teacher in Newcastle, Karen Scanlon at Embracing Birth, if anybody wants to go and find some really wonderful birth education, she spoke about the different places to give birth and the different models, and she was always very complimentary of Belmont's support. And then she said something to me like, well, why aren't you having the baby at home? And I suppose I'd never really thought about it, but the midwife had actually asked the same question at the booking in appointment. She said, well, would you like to have the baby at home? And my husband and I kind of looked at each other and were like, oh, I don't know about this. Like, this, we've never really thought about this before. And I just was like, oh, maybe not. Maybe second time around, but for the first one, we'll just come in here. But the more that I learned about physiologic birth, the more I really didn't want to have to get in the car and go somewhere else and have to reacclimatize. And so we learned about what their processes were, about emergencies, transfers, what gear they would have for neonatal resuscitation if required, that they would have two midwives present because that's what's legally required, all of these sorts of things. And for me, from my home, it takes 20 minutes to get from here to the birth center, or it would take 20 minutes to transfer to hospital if we needed to the main hospital. And if there was any emergency at Belmont, we would have had to transfer across to the big hospital anyhow. So we decided that we would stay home, and if there was an emergency, we'd only end up with one trip, not two. And it was beautiful. I had an incredible physiologic birth, absolutely like out of body kind of experience. 12 hour start to finish, an hour in the birth pool at the end through that kind of pushing or ejection kind of phase. And yeah, I had a few stitches, got stitched up on my own bed, had a shower in my own shower, all of these things. It was just wonderful. So second pregnancy, between then and now, I have lived birth and pregnancy and postpartum and learnt a lot. And I just had the strong feeling, or I suppose inner knowing, that I just wanted to be a step further removed from the hospital system. And while again I would be a low risk pregnancy, I knew that there are certain criteria and rules and things that crop up and things that a public service has to do to tick boxes of their overseeing obstetricians, that I just felt like I wanted to be further outside of that. So my next quest was to find a private midwife. And actually part of it as well was that I had my first daughter at 41 and 3 days. And in the public funded service, you have to be in established labour at 41 and 6 for them to be able to care for you. And I wasn't really clear on my like period and ovulation dates for this pregnancy. My cycle hadn't returned for very long and it was quite erratic. And I just felt like if this baby wants to cook a little bit longer, if my dates are wrong, like it just felt a bit too close for comfort. And private midwives can keep you under their care until I think until 42 and 6, so a whole extra week, and that felt like extra breathing space to me. So the next step was to find a private midwife. Excuse me, but, and now Home Birth Australia now have a directory of private midwives available on their website. Not every single practitioner is on there though, so that's a good place to start. Look around, see who's in your area, and then ask some local doulas as well, because they might know a couple of people who are not on that national register. Still registered with all their health requirements that they need to have, but just not on that Home Birth Australia directory list, I mean. So yes, see if there's a public program in your area, if you fit the criteria, if you want to go that way. If you want to go private, check the directory, ask around other doulas, other people who may be interested in birth and home birth, and then contact them as soon as you can, because they will fill up. I mean, like as soon as your partner knows, start contacting midwives. Really, really early. Don't be thinking, oh, I'll just wait until sort of 12 or 13 weeks. Just get in there straight away. So you might like to interview a couple of people, contact them, see if they've got availability. They set their own pricing, but usually it's somewhere in the vicinity of $6,000 or $7,000 across the entire course of care. So they come to your home for every pregnancy appointment, for your birth, and every postnatal appointment as well, right through to 6 weeks. And that's kind of another benefit of the private midwifery, is that you get continuity of care for up to 6 weeks after the birth, whereas through public system it's kind of maximum two. And out of that $6,000 or $7,000, you get quite a bit of it rebated from Medicare later on as well. So the out-of-pocket cost ends up actually being a lot less than if you went to a private hospital, even when you have the best private insurance available. So that's a bit of background on the choosing the home birth. It was just a no-brainer second time around. Like, the first experience was so great. There is no way that you could have paid me to like willingly choose hospital-based care instead. Well, and I will just say, if private midwifery isn't available in your area, or if you just don't want it, it is legal. Like, it is allowed to birth your baby and have an entire pregnancy without medical care of any kind. So if free birth is something that feels like it's kind of calling you a little bit, go and take a listen to the Positive Birth Stories Australia podcast. And also, there's an episode on free birth with a researcher on the Midwives Cauldron podcast. And yeah, if you want some of the stats and things that I won't go into today about home birth, then have a listen to the Great Birth Rebellion podcast episode with Amy Aroha, aka Rip Snorter. All right. But generally, just know it's awesome. And you don't have to be low risk. It's still a good option for most people. All right. So, after that, what do I want to talk about? I might just talk you through some logistics. So, we have usually you can choose if you want to involve water when you're at home. You've got access to your own shower. If you have a bath, your own bath. You may also want to buy or hire a home birth pool. There are a few companies that do hire, and also private midwives will sometimes lend you a pool as well as part of their fee, and then you just have to buy the a liner to go in it. Before our first birth, we actually were able to buy a secondhand pool for the same cost that it was going to be to hire it. So we don't bother with the liner part. And we talked with our midwife about, we don't need to borrow yours, we don't need the liner, so could you take a little bit off our fee? And that was fine. So, yes, we currently have a birth pool that is three quarters inflated in the room next door to where I'm sitting. We just pumped it up to make sure that it had no leaks in it, because because it's been sitting in the garage for a while in its special case. And then we deflated it a little bit so it wasn't under pressure for all this time. Now, with a foot pump, it would take a while to inflate the sides. If you have a little mini leaf blower, though, it takes less than 2 minutes, probably 1 minute. So that's a hot tip if you're going to be getting ready in a rush. You then need to get a special hose to attach to your tap. So a usual kind of sink or like kitchen or laundry sink kind of mixer tap. You just need a little attachment to go between that and like the sort of hose that you would have for drinking water if you were using a caravan. So you can get both of those things from Bunnings. Sometimes they're on special at Aldi too, Aldi special buys. And yeah, you just want to make sure that the hose can reach from there, from your water source to the pool, and that's all good. You also then want to have like a manual or hose draining kind of siphon of some kind. I think for us, our house is on piers, so we can just attach the hose to the outlet valve of the pool and put it out onto the veranda and make sure that the end of the hose is down lower than the pool itself and it drains itself out. Now, I had nothing to do with the cleanup process last time. I just got up in the morning and it was magically all done, which was beautiful. Pardon me. So don't quote me on that, but that's a nice kind of procedural task that a partner might like to take on researching and doing. I have a Fitball, I have a shower chair, which is really handy because we've had that for when less mobile visitors come to stay with us. And I've put it down onto the lowest setting because that's a really good height for me to kind of sit on the edge of the chair and lean forward, and the shower can then angle down and hit right on my lower back, which is lovely. And I can't stress enough, like the relief of getting into the water first time around was just incredible. Like, I don't think there's any drug on the planet that could have done as well as just getting into water did. So yeah, if that's something that's speaking to you, have a look at those kind of options. A waterproof mattress protector for your bed is a good idea regardless of if you're birthing at home or not, because then if your water breaks in the night, you really don't want to be having to like buy a whole new mattress when you're postpartum, because it's going to be very difficult if it comes in a rush to get all of that back out again. So waterproof mattress protector from Kmart or Target, they're about $20. And yeah, probably useful anyway if you're going to have baby spew and wheeze and things around your house. You want to be cozy with them and protect your mattress too. So that is something that we definitely have in place. And I think that's about it for logistics. Like the actual labor part, the things that we've collected to support or to have on hand for after the birth. I do have some heat packs and stuff like that. I didn't bother with a TENS machine first time around. And so I didn't need it. I'm not going to have it this time either. So I'm bringing my birthing box a little bit closer. So one thing to know is to have a lot of towels. So far we've got about 5 here, and hopefully there'll be some more in our usual cupboard where they usually are, but we've borrowed an extra 5. I know some midwives recommend having 10 because you can be in and out of the pool a few times or out of the shower. Nice to have fresh ones for you and baby afterwards to drape across you in the water, all of those sorts of things. So lots of towels. At the top of the box. So I make a birth box so that everything's all in the one place. When I go into labor, then my husband just has to pick up one box, take it to the lounge room, which is where the birth pool will be, and everything that we're going to need for birth and that really early post-birth phase is right there. And also then if we need to transfer to hospital, it's just a case of taking out a few things and putting a couple of extra in. So at the top of this box, I just have a little note that says, if going to hospital, remove the towels and add these things instead. So stuff like wallet, phone chargers, phones, speaker and headphones, colostrum from the freezer, because I've done some antenatal expressing, and a drink bottle with a straw. So, yeah, then it doesn't feel like I'm making a hospital bag. There's just something about the language that, like, I don't want to be going near a hospital. This is practical. But also it's going to be perfect. So it's just a plastic crate with this stuff in it. So I've got the towels, I've got a beautiful blanket, that I had some breastfeeding photos done with my older daughter, and yeah, I've got the same blanket in here as a special thing, a few little wraps for the baby, a few pairs of undies and pajamas and stuff for me. What else? Some baby wipes and disposable nappies. Usually we use cloth, but I don't like to start on cloth until after the meconium has passed and my milk's come in fully. A spew bag, a vomit bag, some clary sage and a hanky, a few candles that we'll put onto the top of our cabinet, which I've cleaned off of toys, so it's ready just to set up kind of a birth altar there, and some matches. Another box with some gemstones and affirmations and things that people have made for me. So sorry about this cough. Breast pads and some hydrogel breast discs. I have a container with a lid that is for keeping our placenta in because I want to keep it. It'll be encapsulated by the Oxytocin Collective as the first one was. And there's also a nice bowl to put it in and take some photos because I want to keep the placenta attached until after the until after it's been born. I have some different teas here from Blissful Herbs. Sorry, Blissful Herbs. So I have some no bleed tea, which says to help prevent excessive third stage bleeding. Third stage is the delivery of the placenta. Support the uterus, reduce after pains, and warm and nourish the mother. So the idea is that as soon as baby's out, someone makes me a cuppa with that, and I keep on sipping on it until, yeah, until as long as I want, really. I also have some after pain ease teas. My after pains were atrocious with the first one, like so much worse than actually giving birth. I don't know if that's just because the hormones and stuff had worn off a bit, but it was really intense and they're meant to get worse with each baby, so I'm not really looking forward to that. I do have a bit of a plan this time though. So in this box I also have a couple of sheets of Panadol and ibuprofen in a little container, so you know this is inside many layers of things so my child can't get to it accidentally somehow. And I'll want those on hand whether I'm at home or at hospital. I have some pseudo cream and nipple balm and peri mist spray. And it says, I don't think this gets made any, this brand gets made anymore. It's left over from first time, but it says, a soothing and healing mist for the perineum after birth. Spray onto the tender areas frequently. So yeah, it's just different essential oils, basically, with witch hazel and aloe vera. Some maternity pads in there. A few changes of clothes for baby, and a few little wraps for them. And probably most importantly, oh, actually, not most importantly, but there's also a metal sieve. If you're not birthing at home, don't worry about this one. But if you are, as baby's head comes out, your rectum is squeezed like a tube of toothpaste. So it's good to have a sieve to get any bits out of the pool as you go, especially if you've got a kid who might want to get in with you. Yeah, great thing to talk about. Hey, there's also a little sign to put on our front gate. It says, as you know, we're expecting our baby any day. We ask for privacy to rest at the moment. If you need something urgently, please call Anna's dad on blah, 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 blah. So we do live in a neighborhood that people kind of pop in sometimes. And we have a few of these signs to put on the front gate, on the front door, and the back door to make sure that there's no popper-inners while my baby is literally popping out. And then there's a big garbage bag as well so that any extra things can go in there. I can't find where our sort of like waterproof pads are. You know, the sort of pads that you put down when it's when you're toilet training a puppy or something like that. I can't find them. They're around somewhere, so they'll go with this box as well. Most importantly, though, is my birth preferences sheet. So it's actually 3 pages, but it's broken up into categories. So it says home birth setup at the top, and it's got what jobs I'm doing, what jobs my partner's doing. So like he's going to organize for our older child to be collected, and I'll talk about that in a second, or take her somewhere else. And it's my job to phone the midwife, that kind of thing. He's exactly what he needs to do to get the pool ready. What I'm going to do about I'm going to take care of the like the altar and the music and candles if I have time for that. And then it gets into the actual preferences. So there's one section that's home birth set up and then some dot points. And then preferences for my home birth. And then that's about one page worth of stuff. So there's a copy for us, a copy for the midwife that I'm going to give to her next appointment. So that's on file. So everything's kind of documented for her as well. And then I've got 1.5 pages that will come with us if we need to go to the hospital. So it breaks it down into if I require transfer to hospital during labour, if I require a C-section, I want. If NICU, special care, or mother-baby separation is required, this is what I would prefer. And if I require transfer to hospital after birth, e.g., for postpartum hemorrhage or complex stitching, I would prefer blah, blah, blah. So all of them are written as in an ideal world, this is what I would like. I know that they're not, that it may be that not all of them are able to be upheld, but my preferences are documented at least. And both my midwife and my partner can refer to them if I'm not in a state to do so. So that's the actual birth and the labouring and whatnot. About what's happening with my older kid. So I have a great passion of making birth a family event and a normalised thing and all of that kind of stuff. I had this beautiful vision of her being next to me outside the pool, or perhaps even in the pool when her baby sibling was born. And as the time progressed, I was watching more birth videos where there were children present, and it just looked really annoying to me. Like I couldn't get past that occasionally she would still have the birthing person or mother would still have to do something that was like caring for her older child. And I just was leaning more and more towards like, I don't know that I want her here. And we'd been playing lots of games, practicing with noises particularly. She's quite auditory sensitive, so getting used to the noises that might be part of birth. And then she and I watched a birth video, actually of somebody earlier in this series. So midwife Kate Elizabeth, her birth videos were online, and I watched it with my daughter. And she was amazed. She was loving watching it. She had this big smile on her face. She was pointing and talking to me about it, and she thought it was amazing. And then at the end, she said, I think when your baby's coming out, I'll go to grandma and grandpa's house instead. And I was just like, yes, this is so good. We've both come to the same conclusion that it's better for you not to be here. Now, with that, I also realized that if she wasn't going to be here, I also didn't actually want my birth photographer there either. And it also cut out her, the person that we were going to have as her support person here. So suddenly it's gone from like, you know, this bigger than Ben-Hur event, just back to like me and my partner, primary midwife arriving when she arrives, and secondary midwife arriving and just like being in the corner and probably not even being noticed. And that felt much better. So we had done some preparation. We've done some preparation with different books and stuff anyway, because we weren't sure what she was going to be doing. There's also a period for a week between now and actually it's starting this weekend. So there's a period where all of the support people that would be her preferred people to go to are away at the same time. So it may be that she ends up staying anyway. So we just want to be still prepared. So there's a few books. One of them that we liked earlier in the piece, it's really inclusive and talks all about conception and things as well, is called Making a Baby by Rachel Greener. There's a couple of other picture books that we have here too. One is Mummy's Having a Home Birth by Natalie Johannick and Lara Hardy. And the other one is Welcome Home by Alicia Burke and Katie Atkinson. I think all of these are in the story highlight on my book recommendations story highlight on Instagram too. Yeah, so we've been doing that. She's also been playing games with me. Her favorite game to play at the moment is, she calls it Born Baby. So I have to stand up and I wrap a blanket around my tummy, and she is between my tummy and the blanket. And I have to make all the noises of labor and like squat and stuff. And eventually she plops out of the bottom of the blanket onto the floor. Pardon me. So then I scoop her up. Like, I sit down on the floor too and I scoop her up and tell her that she's one of the most beautiful things that I've ever seen, and check what color her eyes are for the first time and find out what body parts she has and that she's a girl baby, and count all her fingers and toes, and she can't do anything yet for herself. And eventually she pretends to drink milk, and you know, suddenly time collapses and she has to learn the next things that babies do. So she's got to lie on the floor and learn to kick her legs and reach for stuff, and then to roll over, and then to crawl, and then to stand up, and then to walk, and then to run and jump. And when she can do everything that she can do now at age 3.5, then the game is finished. She wants to play it multiple times a day. So this is obviously her like processing what happened for her. I think it helps as well because when we're talking about, you know, that this baby will be born probably where she was born, we've got the pull out that she was born in. We've got pictures, you know, we're talking about it. And that might be something that's a little different to how you have to prepare if your older child was born in a different kind of environment. But yeah, it's cool. Use lots of videos, and there are good books around if you go looking for them. In terms of anything else that I'm doing, I am doing some antenatal hand expression of colostrum a few times a week. I've only done it 3 times so far. And about 25% of women find that they don't get any drops of colostrum out doing that. It has no impact on your ability to feed your baby afterwards. So if you try it a couple of times and you're getting nothing, don't bother yourself with it. For me, I do get a bit. I think I'm actually kind of a hyper responder. It's quite easy for me to do. And I like having that kind of backup supply there. I ended up with a lot of it last time and couldn't even find anywhere to give it away, which is sad, but that's okay. We did use it, even though it's usually recommended for women with gestational diabetes, but we did just use a few syringes worth when I was particularly exhausted or my nipples were very sore or something like that in that first week. Perineal massage is something that I haven't started doing yet. I've been doing pelvic floor exercises the whole way through, and at this point it's something that's important to do, but also not just doing squeezes and stuff all the time. You have to really allow your pelvic floor to properly relax between each effort, because that's the relaxation that you're going to need to get the baby out. You don't want a pelvic floor that's holding you wheezing but not able to get your baby out. I am working with an osteopath. I'm actually going to see them today. I just booked this appointment for a tune-up. I think it's good to have everything as aligned as possible at this point. And other than that, we're doing a spinning babies maneuver that's for optimal fetal positioning, you could call it. And there are a few different moves you can do. First time around I was doing all of them. So there's one that's like almost like a bit of a headstand one off the couch, one that's a like being on all fours, and another one that's a side lying hip release. So this time I know my baby's already head down, We're just doing the side lying hip release for a few minutes each day to hopefully optimize the tension and stuff around the ligaments in my pelvis and allow baby's head to get into the best position that it can for birth. And also knowing this time I'm very clear on that the baby knows the best path to get out. So I'm really not as focused on, you know, trying to get it to stay on the left side or trying to get it to, you know, so head down with the baby's body on the left side is usually promoted as like the optimal thing. But also, you know, my daughter was on the right side and I still had a textbook labor. Posterior is a variation of normal. Breech is a variation of normal. All of these sorts of things. So this time I'm much more trusting the process. I have specified in all my preferences that I don't want to have any stretch and sweeps or anything that might be considered a natural induction method. You know, there's the current understanding is that the baby's lungs give indications to the mother's or birthing parent's body when they're mature enough to be born, and that in combination with the mother's metabolic rate not being able to sustain the growth of a baby anymore, is those two things kind of kick off the hormone cascade that leads to labor. So long as I do my bit, that's my brain work, to get my head out of the way of that physiological process happening, then that's good. Because if I'm too stressed, then the baby's going to be getting the hormonal message, or my body's going to be getting the hormonal message that it's not safe to come yet. So it's starting to dial down the outside noise, starting to just, you know, not read anything that's too confronting. I'm reading like chick lit, when usually I would read quite heavy material sort of books. And yeah, just trying to go with the flow and not stress my body too much. You know, when I feel good, I'm going for a walk, but I'm not doing like, you must walk up and down stairs and do all these lunges and whatever to be like bringing on labor early. I'm like, the baby will come when it's ready to come. So that's where I'm at. I feel ready for birth. I don't know that I feel 100% ready for postpartum yet. I actually don't know that I'll feel completely ready for birth until all those people are back from their holidays. Very conveniently timed all simultaneously. But you never know. If the baby's lungs and my metabolic rate says it's ready, then we will roll with it, and that's how we go. So thanks for listening. Do whatever it is that you need to do to feel the most supported, the most well, the most safe. If you are interested in home birth or really how to support birth physiology in any environment, do go and listen to that episode of the Great Birth Rebellion podcast between Melanie the midwife and Amy Aroha. Cool, I think it's called Giving Birth at Home. And yeah, trust yourself. Trust yourself. You will know what you need. And I think that's what's different this time too, is that when I had my daughter at home, it was this big secret. Like really only midwife, doula and us knew. Oh, and my parents. And other than that, we weren't telling anybody, because I felt like, I actually worked in a hospital at the time as well, and I felt like if I broadcasted that I was having a home birth and then I needed to transfer, that it would be a failure of some kind. And I've had a lot of time to sit through that and work through that, and I've had a session with a kinesiologist this time as well, because I did still have fears about what kind of care that I would receive in hospital, because in my perspective, you know, pregnancy and birth is a state of health and hospitals are a place of sickness. But if I need to transfer, then that actually is a medical thing, and so therefore it needs medical support, and a hospital is a place to get that. And with continuity of care from a midwife, you pick up on anything that might transpire into an emergency much faster. than you otherwise would in just like standard care, where somebody's wandering in and out of the room and the birth physiology isn't really supported. So I suppose I'm really much more happy this time with the idea that if I need to transfer, then that's actually home birth done right, not a failure. So that's it. That's me. I'll pop in again here, so long as I don't have a baby in the next 24 or 48 hours, I'll pop in here again to record about my postpartum preparations, and I'll see you all on the flip side. Thanks so much for listening. If you love this episode of Anna Asks, it would be a great help if you pop across and leave us a 5-star rating or review. This helps other parents and people to find us and join in the conversation. You can also become a sponsor of this pod for $2.99 Australian a month via the link in the show notes, or head to my website www.annacusack.com.au to grab my free postpartum preparation e-guide, check out my services, or grab my book, Mama, You're Not Broken. Until next episode, bye from me, unless of course you want to come chat via social.